Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 133 event, which takes place in Boise, Idaho. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley won 1.35 units for UFC 226 on his free bet, which was underdog Anthony Pettis. Make sure to check out his fantasy advice and bets on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 226 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the fight card on Fight Pass is a women's strawweight contest between Jessica Aguilar, who is 19-6, and Jody Esquibel, who is 6-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Aguilar opened minus 155, the comeback on Esquibel plus 115. And looking over a sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, currently at DSI, it's Esquibel now minus 155. The comeback on Aguilar is actually plus 125. So line actually flipped. Now, Esquibel did close a favorite in their recent matchup. I mean, they were supposed to both take this fight at Fight Night 131. So a couple Fight Night cards ago, but unfortunately Aguilar got removed from the card by the Athletic Commission due to medical concerns. So this kind of got rebooked a little bit here further down the road, a couple Fight Night cards later. That being said, it's still, I mean, obviously not the matchup itself hasn't changed. So if you guys want to look back at get detailed breakdowns of the Fight Night 131 podcast, you can hear our breakdown of this fight. So I'll go a little bit quicker here, but a lot of people are counting Aguilar out. They think she's basically a declined fighter in this spot, and she is. I mean, she was definitely one of the best strawweights in the world for a long, long time, rated number one. I mean, her ability, her training, everything about her. I mean, she's definitely world-class at the competition level she's faced, and I mean, she's a well-rounded mixed martial artist. She has some striking, has some wrestling, has some grappling. So everything that you want in a fighter, Aguilar has. So she's been that way for a long time, but unfortunately for her, I mean, father time catches up with everybody, right? So she's definitely towards the downward end of her career. I mean, she's suffered back-to-back losses over great competition, though. If you look at it in the UFC so far, she's fought Gadella, she's fought Casey. Those are two top strawweights that she competed against. So respectable losses, to say the least, but she's definitely a declined fighter. So that's why I think everybody's coming in on Esquibel here. Esquibel is actually a pretty solid fighter in her own right. We all know that she's has that Invicta experience over solid competition in that league as well. And she's a very powerful little, I want to say little, they're about the same height according to what the stats say. But honestly, Jessica Aguilar is going to be bigger. She's going to be taller a little bit than Esquibel. So to me, Esquibel is a shorter, stocky fighter, has a lot of power, has some speed, has a good training camp at Greg Jackson's as well. So she's definitely a solid fighter, and it's not going to be an easy fight for either girl here. I think that it's going to be very competitive. And in fact, if it goes to scorecards, which I think it will, it's probably going to be a split decision type of fight. With that said, I'm going to slightly lean a little bit towards Aguilar. I think she's just a little bit more of the complete fighter. And I don't think Esquibel, her punching power is going to do enough here to get the job done against Aguilar. So I think this fight's going to be competitive on the feet. I think Aguilar probably gets top position on the ground. And I think she's going to grind out a very close competitive decision. She has enough left in the tank to still do that. So expecting a coin flip type of fight, but I'm going to go against the grain and I'm going to actually pick Aguilar to get the win here.
And I'm going to go Aguilar as well. Granted, we have not seen the best out of her, and she is getting up there in years, but I mean, at one point, she was the number one ranked women's strawweight fighter in the planet, and you gotta take that seriously. And she's gone 0-2 in the UFC, but she faced two top 15 fighters, especially one of them a top 5 fighter, Claudia Gadelha, so I'm not gonna put that against her too badly. Jody Esquibel, on the other hand, really, the only thing she's got going for her is that she trained out of a really good gym. And that's just not enough for me. I mean, so did Emily Kagan, who was also a strawweight that competed on The Ultimate Fighter, the original
strawweight season, and she was not good at all. So I think that just because he trained at a good gym doesn't make you a great fighter. And I think Esquibel's record kind of proves that. At 6-3, she pretty one-sidedly lost in her UFC debut that she took to take on Kovalkiewicz. And I think here, Aguilar will probably hold her own on the feet, and if and when it goes to the floor, Aguilar should get the better there for sure. She's the better ground fighter. That's her biggest strength. She has good wrestling and very strong Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu skills, and I think that she could win this fight by submission if it does get a finish. So I'm going to side with Jessica Aguilar. I think she does get her first UFC win. Now, moving up to the flyweight division, we have Mark De La Rosa, who is 9-1, taking on Elias Garcia, who is 3-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Garcia opens -130, De La Rosa opened -110, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it's Garcia -140, the comeback in De La Rosa is +110. So line margins have tightened up, a little bit more action coming in Garcia's way. Should mention off the rip, Garcia is Anthony Pettis' cousin, so he was actually found on looking for a fighter from Dana White. Of course, they had a lot of hype coming in with Elias and being Pettis' cousin and all that, so they flew to Mexico, got to watch one of his fights, and they were very impressed. I mean, he ended up getting a knockout win, and they signed him right then and there to the contract. So Garcia is a very talented fighter. I mean, and then a bloodline of the Pettis brothers, of course, you know what he's getting, and he trains at Duke Rufus as well. So he's just a typical Rufus sport fighter, which is very good in all aspects of the game. I mean, we know they're all strikers, I mean, at heart, but they've also gotten a lot better on the ground. I mean, the wrestling with the likes of Ben Askren and some of the wrestling coaches that have come in have done wonders for them as far as the wrestling aspect goes. I know they still need some work. I mean, when you take a pure striker and start working wrestling, it's going to take some time for these guys to catch up in that area, but they're doing a really good job. And then, of course, the jiu-jitsu aspect of things, man, these guys are very dangerous on the ground as well. Slick submission skills. So that's exactly what you're going to get with Garcia here. He's a very well-rounded fighter. He can knock you out on the feet. He's got long limbs. He can submit you on the ground. His wrestling's okay as well. It still needs a little bit more work there. He can be put on his back, but even if you put him on his back, the guy's dangerous there as well. So this is not going to be an easy fight for De La Rosa. I'll tell you what, I have a ton of respect for De La Rosa as well. You know, he took a fight against Tim Elliott on short notice just to get into the UFC. That's a very tough fight. Even if it was a bantamweight, where Elliott's been fighting a little bit more, obviously at flyweight, we should mention that. And also, I mean, Garcia's primarily a flyweight as well. So Garcia's taking this fight on short notice, or he's taking this fight coming in at bantamweight instead of flyweight. That's what's going on here as well. So normally Garcia would fight at flyweight. He's stepping up. De La Rosa is going to be in his natural division at bantamweight. So that's interesting as well. Now, that said, De La Rosa is a very good fighter. I know that didn't really fare well for him in his UFC debut against Elliott, but Elliott's stylistically a tough matchup to come in as your first UFC fight. I mean, the guy has title fight experience. The guy has won the Ultimate Fighter before. I mean, he's got world-class grappling skills. He's faced the best of the best. I mean, it's a very tough fight to accomplish a win against Tim Elliott in your UFC debut. So I'll give De La Rosa the benefit of the doubt here, and he is better what he showed. I mean, De La Rosa is another well-rounded fighter. He's got some power on the feet. He's a little spark plug, man. I mean, he's fast, he's aggressive, and he's got KO power to go along with a pretty decent ground game. He can submit you on the ground as well. Now, of course, in the Elliott fight, he showed a little bit of weakness in a little bit of the ground defense and in the takedown defense as well. But against Garcia, I don't think he's going to have to worry about that all that much. Now, the ground defense he is going to have to worry about, but the pure wrestling aspect of it, I think he's not going to have to worry as much as Elliott was on him and that part of it. So it's going to be an interesting fight. I could see it going either way here. I'm going to pick Garcia to get the win here. I think that what he's shown so far, even though he's stepping up in weight class a little bit, I think his skill set, I trust him a little bit more. I think he's just slightly further ahead. Even though he doesn't have maybe the exact experience De La Rosa has, I still like what I see as far as a pure prospect from Garcia. I think he can do a little bit more damage on the feet, possibly tie De La Rosa up on the ground a little bit and make life tough for him and miserable for him as well. So slight lean towards Garcia in this matchup, so that's who I'm going to pick. And from top to bottom, let me just say this. This card is outstanding. I mean, it's very underrated, flying under the radar. Every fight on this card is a competitive matchup, so it's not easy as far as the betting window goes either, but there's some value to be had from top to bottom for sure, because I think there's going to be some dogs barking. But overall, for this matchup here, I'm going to slight lean towards Garcia.
And I'm going to side with Mark De La Rosa. I mean, Elias Garcia is a talented fighter. He has some knockout power. He has some strong submission ability. So he's going to be a threat in this fight. The main reason I'm siding with De La Rosa is I just feel he's way better than what he showed. I mean, he was awful in that UFC debut, and I'm not sure if it was UFC jitters. He was just facing somebody that was a legit contender, a top 10 guy in Tim Elliott. I just don't know what it was, but he just did not look good. He didn't look like he belonged, and that does concern me. But what doesn't concern me is how good he looked everywhere else in terms of every other fight he's had and every fight that he's had that's had film. He looked like a guy that belonged in the UFC. So what I'm expecting here and what I hope is that now that he's got that out of his system, he shows up and takes care of business. I mean, he is a solid striker. De La Rosa has pretty good wrestling. He has a strong ground game. He has way more experience than Garcia, even if Garcia does come from a strong Pettis bloodline and trained at Rufus and is dangerous. I just think that De La Rosa is capable, and if he fights the way that he should be fighting and that he's capable of fighting, he should be able to get the win here. But again, I am really concerned after the egg that he laid in his UFC debut. So we'll see if he can put that behind him and fight to his potential. And if he does, I think that he does get the win. Now, closing out the Fight Pass prelims, we have a women's flyweight contest between Liz Carmouche, who is 10-6, and Jennifer Maya, who is 15-4-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
This fight opened exactly pick minus 120 either way. Maya minus 120, Carmouche minus 120. And right now looking over at BetDSI, it is Carmouche minus 135. The comeback on Maya is at plus 105. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and more action coming in Carmouche's way. Tough fight, another one, like we said. I mean, Invicta champion Maya coming over. I mean, it's about time she got over to the UFC, honestly. I mean, with her ability to improve through the years is what's impressed me the most out of Maya. I mean, if you look back at some of her Invicta fights early on in her career compared to where she's at right now, I mean, way better. World of difference. She's gotten so much. She's put the work in. I mean, she's rounded out her game so much more. I mean, she's her takedown defense is better. Her striking's better. Her confidence. I mean, just across the board, her conditioning. She's faced solid competition in Invicta as well. So Maya is ready to come over and make some waves in the flyweight division. And I think this is an excellent test, an excellent matchup for her to come in and get somebody like Liz Carmouche, because we all know what Carmouche is made of. And again, in the bantamweight division, I mean, Carmouche has fought the who's who, and she was highly, obviously touted. I mean, she's got the wrestling background, of course. She's got some power on the feet. She's improved her game on the feet as well. And she is more of just a wrestler these days, Carmouche is. So that's why I'm excited about this matchup, because Carmouche definitely presents a lot of problems for a fighter like Maya. But I think Maya's going to be ready and it's going to be game. So the pick'em price where it opened, I think, is more than fair. And that's why it's staying around that area as well, because I think this is going to be another split decision type of fight when it hits the scorecards. Carmouche is going to want to look to slow things down a little bit, close a distance, and not leave Maya with open space, because that's where Maya's going to do some of her best work. But even inside, in the clinch, Maya is no slouch at all. She can do some damage there. So again, I think it's Carmouche that has to mix things up, get some takedowns, be aggressive, hold Maya up against the cage, kind of slow this fight up, make it an ugly, grinding type of fight, and she could barely edge it out. I think that's how it probably plays out. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Carmouche myself. I think she's going to, again, just be a little bit better grinder, and that's going to probably be in her favor as it hits the scorecards. She's going to edge out a 29-28 decision type of win, maybe even a split decision type of win. That's how close this fight's going to be. So unfortunately for Maya, I think she's probably going to suffer a defeat in her UFC debut. But man, watch out for this girl. She's going to probably win plenty of fights down the road as well, and make it to a contender type of status eventually in the UFC. That's how much she's improved, and I'm expecting her to keep on improving that much more as well. So Maya's legit, but I'm going to slightly lean towards Carmouche in this matchup.
And I'm going to come in the same way. I definitely have a lot of respect for Maya's striking. Her Muay Thai skills are very good. And if she's given a chance to have some free space against Carmouche and open up with her striking, I think that she could definitely win this fight. But Maya has had problems being put on her back. Her takedown defense isn't that good. And she has been in those types of fights where she's been pushed against the fence and it's turned into a clinch fest. So she's facing someone in Carmouche that thrives in pushing people against the fence, looking for takedowns, grinding fights out, dragging them out a little bit. And I think that that'll take away a lot of Maya's weapons and strengths. So in this fight, if Carmouche is able to close that distance and make this ugly, I think it's going to be right up her alley. And I think that she will get her first win in the flyweight division after a close split decision loss to Alexis Davis in her initial drop down. Carmouche is physically very strong, and I think that she can manhandle Maya a little bit if she's able to get her hands on her. So I'm going to side with Carmouche. I think that she gets the job done, but I also agree with Nick that this will not be the last you've seen of Jennifer Maya. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims in the featherweight division, we have Curd Hollabaugh, who is 17-4, taking on Rayoni Barcelos, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hollabaugh open -215, the comeback on Barcelos at +165. And right now over at BetDSI, it's -195 for Hollabaugh. The comeback on Barcelos is at +155. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and line staying steady. It was a pretty solid opening line, I think. And it's a tough one again, because Hollabaugh should be the rightful favorite in this matchup. I mean, he's got the much better experience as a whole. He even, you know, had a short stint, one fight in the UFC before, which he should have stuck around. I know he lost to Steven Seiler in that spot way back when, I believe it was in 2013. But outside of the UFC, man, the guy had proved that he belongs, I mean, amongst the best, definitely, in the featherweight division, at least lightweight, featherweight. He's been bouncing back and forth for some time now, but he's definitely a skilled fighter. He's got it all. He's got the complete package. He can beat you on the feet, as proven in his contender series fight against Matt Bissett, man. I mean, Bissett is a very tough dude. He's not easy to finish, and Hollabaugh just blew right through him. So that was more than impressive. And he's got a lot of solid wins on his resume, honestly. So Hollabaugh continues to improve. Again, he's got some good striking. He's got some pretty solid wrestling to go along with a good grappling game as well. Now, he does have some kryptonite, and that is getting taken down and kind of dominated by better grinders than him or getting outpointed. But he's game, even in those positions a lot of times. I mean, he makes things interesting and keeps things close. So Barcelos is going to have to come in here and really – execute to the best of his ability to get the job done here against a very savvy Hollabaugh. I think he could do it, though. I think it's going to be a very, very close fight. It'll be another one of these split decision type of fights if he hits the scorecards, because Barcelos, what I was saying about Hollabaugh, he has a lot of the same attributes as well. He's got some really good striking on the feet. He's got some power to go along with it. He's got some wrestling. He's got a good ground game as well. He's fought pretty decent fighters. I mean, if you look at Barcelos's resume, a lot of it has come obviously outside of the UFC, but in the likes of RFA, which RFA is Access TV, and we all know that LFA, all those leagues right there are feeders for the UFC. So this guy has faced solid competition, the likes of Moret, you know, and fighters like that. I know that, you know, he actually was supposed to fight Vanetta back at RFA 36 as well. So what I'm trying to say is Access TV Fights is a really good, solid, organization that definitely prepares you to fight UFC caliber fights when you're ready to come in, and exactly that when you're dealing with Barcelos. He's ready to come in, and I think he's going to hang with Hollabaugh. I don't think he's going to beat Hollabaugh on his UFC debut. I think Hollabaugh's going to probably edge him out, but man, I wouldn't be surprised if it's another split decision type of fight, because again, I think these guys are going to be going back and forth on the feet. I think these guys are going to be jockeying for top position on the ground as well. I actually think Barcelos might get a little bit more top position on the ground in this matchup here, so Hollabaugh has to be cautious and not settle for being on his back all that much in this fight. But as a whole, I think he won't do that, and I think he'll keep it upright for the most part, at least. And again, the exchange on the feet will be back and forth, and I just slightly lean a little bit more towards Hollabaugh. I think he's gonna just edge it out in another close competitive fight. But Barcelos is another one of these guys at featherweight that you have to watch out for, and he's gonna win some fights in the UFC. Unfortunately for him, I think Hollabaugh is just too much of a test right now, especially for being out, I mean, a couple years like he has, to bounce back, you know, after your hiatus and come back against a guy like Hollabaugh. It's just asking a little bit too much. So I think Hollabaugh right now, confidence, his mental game, everything's kind of peaking for him, and I think he's going to have a successful re-entry, I should say, into the UFC, because the last fight was against, as I mentioned, Bissett, but that was in the Contender Series, so this is his official second stint in the UFC, and I think he's going to start things off on a good note. So the pick is Hollabaugh to win a very, very competitive fight.
And I'm going to go the other way. I mean, Kurt Hollibaugh, you mentioned that Barcelos has been out for a while with a long layoff, but Hollibaugh is out, has been out for a while as well with the suspension due to using the IV to rehydrate after winning his Tuesday Night Contender Series fight. I mean, it was an impressive performance, but he got, you know, it doesn't count as a win on his record, actually. So I will say that Barcelos actually has a striking style that might mesh pretty well with Hollibaugh's, especially if Hollibaugh shows up very aggressive like he was against Bissett, you know, looking to knock his head off. Barcelos has a counter-striking style that could play right into, or that Hollibaugh's style could play right into, and I think Barcelos could have some very good success on the feet. On the ground, as Nick mentioned, both of them are talented there, but I think Barcelos has the better ground game. He has strong submission ability. He has pretty good wrestling. I mean, he's just a well-rounded, talented Brazilian fighter. It sucks that he's making his UFC debut at 33 years old. I wish that he could have gotten here a little earlier, but you know, that's just how it happened. And you know, this guy is a legitimate talent that competed against some top opposition, and he was supposed to make his UFC debut about a year ago, but it didn't happen, and now it's finally happening. And I think that Hollibaugh is a beatable opponent. I mean, Hollibaugh performed well outside the UFC, going 8-2 and then earning this opportunity again. But I definitely feel like he's still, you know, a similar fighter to what we saw originally when he lost to Steven Seiler. And I think Barcelos can get this victory here, and I think that he does eke out a decision over Hollibaugh. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Justin Scoggins, who is 11-4, taking on Saeed Nurmagomedov, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Nurmagomedov opened -165, the comeback on Scoggins at +125, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it's currently with Nurmagomedov at -157. The comeback on Scoggins is at +127. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two action coming into this fight as well. And it's holding steady. So another spot that's a pretty respectable opening line that's staying steady. And it's a tough fight, another one that we're saying, because you have a debuting UFC fighter in Nurmagomedov. Obviously, you guys are all familiar with the family. I mean, they're a bunch of amazing grapplers, grinders, fighters in general. You know, Habib's cousin, I believe this is here. So that alone is going to gift you some hype and some recognition, especially at the betting window. Just the last name. Unfortunately, I know for a lot of the diehards, they don't care about name recognition, but amongst the casual bettors and casual fans, when they see that name alone, it's going to kind of, you know, get them jumping on this fight a little bit sooner, maybe, or overhyping Nurmagomedov just slightly. Now, with that said, he's a very good fighter, so I'm not going to take him lightly at all. I think this is an excellent matchup. I mean, it's a tough one for him to come into his UFC debut against a guy like Scoggins, though, I'll tell you that. But he does have a path to victory, and unfortunately for Scoggins, it's probably the ground, and it's fight IQ, because Scoggins is such a talented fighter. In my opinion, he is the guy that can match up really well before he showed us some of his flaws, of course, so I'm saying that. But, I mean, they could possibly, potentially match up really well against Demetrius Johnson. Now, of course, Demetrius Johnson on the ground with his grappling ability would be a little bit too much for Scoggins, especially the Scoggins that we've seen get caught in chokes like he has recently. I mean, that's not what you like to see. And Nurmagomedov knows that, and he's going to probably go after that. I mean, the key to victory here for Nurmagomedov is trying to get this fight to the floor, even though he's got some solid striking. And I think on the feet, it will be competitive because both these guys can strike. Both these guys have KO power. I think Scoggins is the better overall striker on the feet. I think Scoggins is the better overall wrestler here as well. But the pure jiu-jitsu game belongs to Nurmagomedov. And then, of course, he's a grinder. Like I said, it kind of runs in the family. So wouldn't be surprised if he gets top position, or he tries to get top position on Scoggins here in this spot as well. But more than anything else, I still think that Scoggins has that potential, has that ability. If he can fight smart and just respect the submission game from Nurmagomedov and not dive in and stick his neck in a position that he shouldn't be in, I think he can win this fight. I mean, I think sky's the limit for Scoggins. He just has to prove to us that his fight IQ and his ground defense is up to par enough that can get him, you know, maybe a couple more wins and climbing that ladder, and we could see the improvement in his game and his IQ. So that's the I guess the iffy part and the risk you take with a guy like Scoggins right now, because he's such a talented fighter. It's, you know, it's a shame that he's been caught up in those losses. Cause I think, like I said, he's potentially a champion in the making here. So a really good fight. The winner's going to move on to way better things here soon. I bet you they get a giant push up that 125 pound ladder. That's no doubt about that for sure. I mean, these guys are both in a prime spot, even Nurmagomedov making his debut. I think another couple fights, they'll probably push him towards a title shot if he does get this W. So with all that said, I'm still going to side with Scoggins. I'm hoping he doesn't get caught up in anything. And if not, I think he wins on the scorecards. He is a better striker. I could see him possibly doing enough damage to maybe finishing this fight before it hits the cards. But more than likely, it probably hits the cards. It's a competitive decision, and I'm going to lean Scoggins to get the W here. So the pick is Scoggins. I hope you don't let me down here.
And I'm going to side with Scoggins as well. I'm definitely nervous about it just because Scoggins makes so many stupid mistakes in fights. I mean, the kid is so talented with his wrestling, with his striking ability, with his kicking game. I mean, he demolished Ray Borg when they fought. I mean, he made Ray Borg look awful. So he's clearly capable of competing and succeeding against some of the best fighters in the entire division. But then he goes in there and sticks his head into takedowns and leaves his neck exposed over and over and over again in stupid mistakes that get him caught in submissions. So that is clearly a concern. I mean, this guy just cannot help himself. Even in fights that he's dominating, he will just shoot in and leave his neck exposed and then get tapped out. It's happened about 3 times now. So it's very difficult to trust Scoggins, especially against somebody that has a strong guillotine choke like Saeed Nurmagomedov. Now, Nurmagomedov, he's a talented striker. I don't think he's as good of a striker as Scoggins. Nurmagomedov relies a little bit more on his kicking game, similar to how Scoggins got started in his career. But again, Scoggins should be more powerful there, and Scoggins definitely should have better boxing. On the ground, Scoggins should have the better wrestling, but why would he want to take the fight there? Nurmagomedov has a strong submission game, and Scoggins' vulnerability over and over again throughout his career has been on the ground by submission. So if I'm Scoggins, if I'm his coach, I do everything in my power to just drive away that instinct to shoot for a takedown when you see an opportunity. And just keep this fight standing and try to outwork Nurmagomedov. And he should be able to do it. It's just, will he shoot in for a takedown and leave his neck exposed? So that is something that I'm always going to be concerned about in every Justin Scoggins fight, but especially against opponents that have some solid defensive submissions off of their back. So I'm going to side with Scoggins, but I am not touching this fight in the betting window with a 10-foot pole. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Darren Elkins, who is 24-5, taking on Alexander Volkanovski, who is 17-1. Now Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Volkanovski opened -160, the comeback +120. That's according to our article at MMAoddsbreaker.com, the odds reaction piece that Adam Martin writes. I do believe there's some spots that actually open Elkins as a favorite, though, if I'm not mistaken. So, with that being said, right now looking over at BetDSI, the current line is Volkanovski -305. The comeback on Elkins is at +245. So even if it was -160, a dog price, whatever the case may be, all the action coming in on Volkanovski early, not really surprised. We all know what kind of hype Volkanovski has. We all know what kind of fighter Elkins is, so I understand why some people might have given him a ton of respect. I mean, the guy's been on an outstanding roll. The fighters that he's beaten, the likes of Michael Johnson, Bermudez, Bektik. I mean, of course, granted, that Bektik fight was a classic comeback, and that you're not going to see that happen every day. But, I mean, the guy has put together some solid wins. He's got a ton of heart. He's got that grinding style. He's got solid fight IQ overall. It's just a tough guy. So Elkins is legit, deserves this win streak, deserves to kind of be making his way up the featherweight ladder for sure. But unfortunately for him, I think he's going to get caught up here against a guy that's ready to take the next step. I mean, Volkanovski, from his debut, we have all heard a lot of buzz and a lot of good things surrounding him. I mean, the guy's a beast. He's got good knockout power. He's got good wrestling. I mean, he just ragdolls people. And you know what? His fight against Jeremy Kennedy, which in his last fight, an undefeated prospect in Jeremy Kennedy, the way he just destroyed Kennedy was very impressive for Volkanovski. I think that was the highlight of his career so far, because Kennedy was on his way to kind of, you know, working up that featherweight ladder as well. And to pick off a prospect like that, the way Volkanovski did, that's some legit stuff right there. So this is not going to be an easy fight for Elkins, because unfortunately for Elkins, anywhere the fight that he might have advantages over most people in a fight, I think Volkanovski, anywhere it takes place, he's going to actually have the edge over Elkins. I think Volkanovski obviously has a better stand-up game. He's a harder hitter here. I think if it stays up too long on the feet, Volkanovski can actually knock Elkins out. As tough as Elkins is, he still takes a lot of punishment, gets split open, bleeds. I think his chin, you know, he has been rocked. He's tough as nails, but he has been rocked. I think a guy like Volkanovski could definitely finish a job and put him out there as well. So not saying he has a bad chin, but I think in this spot here, it can definitely get tested. So wrestling, Elkins probably is going to look to take this fight to the floor and try to utilize that wrestling. I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to hit a takedown or two, but I don't think he's going to be able to hold Volkanovski down. And I think Volkanovski is actually going to get in top position if he is on the ground. And then that ground and pound is pretty brutal as well. So that's what I'm saying as far as stylistical matchups go. This is a tough one for Elkins, and that's why the betting community automatically came in and hammered that low price with Volkanovski and better all the way up. Stylistically, it's not an easy fight for Elkins. Regardless of the streak that he's on, I think it ends here, and so do most people, and it should, really. So I'd be surprised if Elkins continued his rise towards the featherweight title shot here with a guy like Volkanovski. I don't see it happening right now. I think it will be tough, though. It's not going to be an easy fight for Volkanovski. I mean, Elkins is going to push. He's got that heart. Like I said, he's going to make everything tough on Volkanovski, but in the end, it's going to be him with the hand raised, Volkanovski. So I think he could do it inside, but more so probably hits the scorecards as well in this spot. So the pick is Volkanovski to win and get the probably the best and most respected victory of his career so far in the UFC.
It would definitely be the most respected win of Volkanovski's career, because despite his dominant showing so far that we've seen out of him, he's still not ranked in the featherweight division. Elkins definitely deserves to be ranked because of the run he's on and just his history in the promotion. But Volkanovski has looked dominant so far inside the octagon, and I think that he can carry that into this fight. As Nick mentioned, what really stands out for me was Volkanovski's last fight against a very talented Jeremy Kennedy, who is well-rounded, and Volkanovski had his best performance yet. Just absolutely obliterated Kennedy en route to a second round TKO. And against Elkins, he might be able to do the same thing. Granted, I think Elkins is a better version of Jeremy Kennedy, but Volkanovski and Elkins have similar skill sets, but Volkanovski is just a little bit better at those things. I think that Volkanovski is more aggressive. I think Volkanovski has better overall stand-up ability. I think Volkanovski has a lower center of gravity and might be able to get top position if the fight does go to the floor. And Volkanovski is just relentless. He pushes a very high pace. He actually lands almost twice as many strikes per minute than Elkins. He's twice as accurate. His defense is way better. Again, granted, he's faced not quite as good opposition as Elkins. But, I mean, Volkanovski beats him in every category across the board. I mean, there's a reason that he's the biggest favorite on this card. I think there's just a massive amount of respect for him right now. And I think that he pulls through. I mean, Elkins is scrappy and has a lot of heart, and he's tough, and he has strong wrestling, and you can never count him out of a fight. But I think if there's anybody in the UFC that might make Elkins wilt, it could be Volkanovski, at least in the featherweight division. So I'm going to side with Alexander Volkanovski. I think that he gets the job done here, and I think that we really get to see his breakout performance inside the octagon on Saturday night in this bout. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the bantamweight division, we have Eddie Wineland, who is 23-12-1, taking on Alejandro Perez, who is 22-6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Perez opened -215, the comeback on Wineland at +165. We're right now looking over at BetDSI, it's actually -175 for Perez, the comeback +145 on Wineland. Line margins have tightened up. A little bit more action coming in on the underdog Wineland. I know it's another spot right now where we're seeing the younger fighter in Perez that's really turned it up, I mean, to another level in his game recently. I mean, obviously the Ultimate Fighter winner, and since the Ultimate Fighter, he's faced solid competition, and you can see the progression fight by fight. I mean, it's really remarkable the improvement that he's made and the wins that he's had. Sukhmetov, Alcantara, Lopez, the last three fights, the last three victories that he's had, those are all guys that I think before the Ultimate Fighter would have ran through him. But since then, and the training that he's getting with AKA and all the hard work that he's been putting in, you know, training with various high profile gyms and training partners has really paid off. I mean, it's his work ethic that's getting him as good as he is right now. But that being said, Eddie Wineland in his prime would be a solid favorite over Perez. Now, he's not in his prime, and that's why you're seeing Perez actually a favorite over Wineland, because unfortunately for Wineland, I mean, he's been one of those savvy vets that his best days are probably behind him. I mean, he didn't get knocked out by John Dodson in his last fight. Wineland did not, but so I'm looking at that, look, his chin is at least solid enough to survive against a power puncher like Dodson. So I think he should be able to survive against somebody like Perez as well in this spot here. And not just that, I think Wineland can dish it out. And the thing with Perez, even though he's been really good, and I said his improvements have been obvious, he has been tagged in several fights where to the point where he's dropped, he's rocked, and that's not a good look at all. I mean, that's what's made his fights turn into all-out war sometimes. I mean, if you look back at through some of his recent fights, I mean, the guy's bounced up and he's been able to finish fights and win those fights a lot of times. So you got to give Perez credit, but I don't know if he's going to get a second chance with a guy like Wineland, because one thing that doesn't leave with an old knockout artist is the punching power. And I think Wineland can connect and possibly put Perez out in this spot here. So, or it can even just rock him enough to steal rounds. I mean, you got to be cautious with that as well. So this is not a gimme fight. This should be a fight where Perez fights smart. He keeps his hands high and doesn't get clipped and knocked out. He probably outpoints Wineland in the scorecards. I can see that happening. So if this goes to the cards, I edge it out to Perez. Or maybe Perez does land that knockout blow on Wineland, because Wineland is a declined fighter that his chin is getting a little bit worse as well. So I could see Perez possibly getting the knockout win over Wineland as well. But I mean, that wild card is definitely Wineland's power and the experience that he has and the people that he's faced. So Perez has to be careful, and that's what's making me lean a little bit more towards Perez, but it's definitely a dog or pass situation. So I would not lay the chalk on Perez in this spot against Wineland. I think this is a kind of a sleeper fight where Wineland might have enough left and just pulls off a really surprising win. I'm not going to say a huge upset, because it's really not, but a surprising win to most of us, at least, because we do expect Wineland to be that kind of declining fighter that eventually gets cut from the roster or heads over to Bellator or one of those scenarios. But he gets a win here, then he's going to keep his job and keep his contract a little bit longer. And it's quite possible that he does. So another good fight here. I'm going to slightly lean towards Perez, but it's a dog or pass situation in my opinion.
And I'm going to go Perez as well. Eddie Wineland is always going to be dangerous. He has very good knockout power. We saw that in his brief little resurgence that he had recently with, in 2016 with the TKOs and knockouts against, Frankie Sains and Takeya Mitsugaki. But, he returned last year, and John Dodson, you know, made him look silly. I mean, granted, Dodson is a lot faster than Wineland, has some good power, and Wineland just wasn't able to connect in that fight. And I think that Alejandro Perez can kind of do something similar. Now, he's not quite as fast as Dodson, but he has good speed on the feet. He's crafty. He can outpoint Wineland over the course of three rounds. He just has to protect his chin. I mean, that's always been Alejandro Perez's biggest flaw, is he is a bit chinny. He's been caught multiple times by some good strikers and some not so good strikers even. And that has set up a couple of his losses, but he also has been able to dig deep and pull out decisions against fighters that did have good power and weren't able to connect on his chin. And I think that that's kind of what's going to happen here. I mean, Perez is well-rounded. He mixes things up well. He's about 10% more accurate than Wineland. He's a little bit more active than Wineland. He has good enough striking defense that I think that he can avoid Wineland's power. And he might even mix in a takedown or two just to keep Wineland honest. Now, Wineland is, again, always going to be dangerous because of the power he possesses. But unless he clips Perez along the way, I think that Perez will win a decision here. So my pick is going to be Alejandro Perez. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have Kat Zingano, who is 9-3 in the women's bantamweight division, taking on Marion Renault, who is 9-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Renault open -140, the comeback in Zingano even money. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Renault -117, the comeback on Zingano is at -113. So virtually a pick'em fight right now, with a little bit more action starting to come in Kat's way. But there is two-way action in this fight, and it'll continue to have two-way action as well. Kat Zingano was a very, very popular fighter. A lot of people thought that she'd be definitely in line for a title shot. I mean, she was, obviously. She lost to Ronda Rousey relatively quick. I believe it was like 14 seconds that she got submitted by Rousey. But even since then, I mean, a lot of people were expecting her to just go through Pena, go through Vieira, and, you know, kind of get back in the title picture and just continue to dominate. But truthfully, in my opinion, she's always been slightly overrated. I mean, throughout her career, she has some very good wins. I mean, if you look back at some of the wins she has over her resume, you cannot take those away from her. Very solid competition, very good fights. And she's not a bad fighter in any means, but I just think she was a little bit overrated, overhyped throughout her career. And then again, once she got into the UFC, you know, outside of the Nunes win, which is crazy to say, but she does have a win over the current champion Nunes, but she had to dig deep in that fight. And, you know, she had to come back, and that was when Nunes, her conditioning wasn't quite as good. So with that said, I mean, outside of that, she hasn't had that much success in the UFC. But I'm bringing this up because I think she's actually gotten better. I mean, I wasn't, like I said, I thought she was always a little bit overrated. In her losses to Pena, in her last fight to Vieira, I'll tell you what, Vieira, in my opinion, is definitely one of the future champions in the UFC, especially in the bantamweight division. I think Vieira is legit. You know, I think she's going to be possibly the one to give Nunes even some trouble if she could, you know, hangs on her strap for a while, because Vieira is definitely knocking on that title door. And with her ability, she could possibly win that strap. So she has a close split decision loss to, I think, what is or who is a potential champion of Vieira, Kat Zingano. And in that fight, she showed heart. She started coming on. She started making that fight interesting as the fight progressed a little bit. So in my opinion, Kat Zingano is improving. I mean, she's suffering these losses, but I see the improvements in her game, which is totally crazy to say that, because she is suffering some losses, and she was a girl that wasn't losing before. So I know it's a little backwards, but that's just how I see it. So in this spot against Renault here, I think actually Zingano is probably the right side. I know Renault, if you look at it on the feet, she's the more technical striker. She's probably the better striker. If you look at the pure jiu-jitsu game, Renault's probably the better jiu-jitsu artist as well. But with all of it said, I think the improvements again of Zingano, I think her wrestling's better. I think she's going to probably get the fight to the ground and get top position. Now, again, Renault is dangerous off her back. She's proven that time and time again, but I think Zingano is going to be able to kind of neutralize her ground game and her ground attack a little bit and just stay on top, drop some ground and pound. And obviously that's going to help her en route to steal a close decision, what I think. On the feet, she has to be careful, but she does pack quite a punch in her own right. I mean, she's going to be aggressive. She's going to try to bully Renault probably into the cage and try to slow this fight down a little bit and just use her aggression and her strength to break her down as the fight goes on. Because in space, I think Renault's going to be very dangerous for Kat Zingano. So she definitely has to close the gap and get this fight to her realm more than anything else. So I'm looking forward to this fight. I think it's going to be a really good fight. I think this is a good spot for Zingano to actually bounce back and get on the winning track again over a very solid person that's making actually, you know, her own argument that she should be getting a title shot soon as well. And if Renault does get this win over Zingano, she's in the mix for sure. I mean, you can't deny her. She's been very impressive as well. So two ladies that are going to bring it, and they're looking forward to, or they're looking to kind of work up the ladder and potentially get a future bantamweight title shot. There's a lot on the line here. I think Zingano is going to get back on track and steal this win. So the pick is Zingano to probably impress and open up some eyes. Now, that is my biggest concern would be Renault finishes her inside. So if you're going to bet Renault in this spot, I would just say bet it inside. I mean, I think that's how she wins. I don't think she's going to win on the scorecards. I think it's Zingano. So the pick is Zingano, probably wins the decision here.
And I'll come in the other way, mainly because on the feet, Renault should be the better striker. She pushes a strong pace. She has excellent striking fundamentals. And on the ground, Renault is the better submission fighter. She has very strong triangle chokes and arm bars and anything off of her back. She has a pretty good top control game. She can land ground and pound. Realistically, the only thing I see that Zingano is better than Renault is she has a little bit better wrestling. And I just don't think that the path to victory for Zingano is shooting in for repeated takedowns, because then you're playing right into Renault's submission game, which is a big threat. I think that she could catch Zingano with a submission if that's what Zingano repeatedly does with shooting for takedowns. So Renault also, I mean, she has a strong history of coming on late in fights and either earning a late finish or just demolishing her opponent with a barrage of strikes. I think that she can make Zingano wilt a little bit on the feet. Now, Zingano will be dangerous. She has some good knees up in the clinch. She has some strong elbows. Her Muay Thai game isn't too bad. But in just pure striking, that's really not her strength. She's more of a clinch fighter, you know, somebody that just wants to get up, make things ugly, land some dirty boxing. And as long as Renault is able to kind of avoid those situations and either keep this in open space or get this to the floor, even if she's on her back, I think Renault has a good chance of either outpointing Zingano or potentially submitting her. So I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to side with the 41-year-old Marion Renault, who just does not seem like she is getting any older, maybe even defying father time at this point. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Miles Jury, who is 17-2, taking on Chad Mendez, who is 17-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Mendez opened -230, the comeback on Jury +170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, line margins have tightened up, and there is a drop. Right now, it's Mendez at -175, the comeback +145 on Jury. It was actually a little bit lower than that as well. Now we're starting to see some Mendez action, I think, come back in. So there is two action in this fight, but early on it was dog action. Man, I mean, what can you say here in this spot? It's interesting because Mendez was one of the best fighters in the featherweight division. I mean, we've seen that. I thought he was actually going to wear that strap eventually. Unfortunately for him, he suffered that short notice loss to Conor McGregor, and he did have some success early on, in that fight, but unfortunately his gas tank kind of let him down a little bit, and McGregor came through. After that, though, the surprising thing was that he got knocked out by Frankie Edgar. I mean, not that he lost Edgar, because we all know, you know, Edgar's one of the best that UFC's ever seen, but to get blasted and put out by Edgar that quickly in round one was definitely a surprise. So it's a head scratcher. And of course, then he suffered the USADA suspension, and now he's making his return. So I think a lot of people kind of forgot about Chad Mendez, as hard as that is to believe, because he was such a mainstay in the featherweight division. I mean, just a monster as far as his knockout power, his speed, his athleticism, his wrestling. I mean, the guy is so good. His chokes, man, that alpha male guillotine choke, unbelievable. So Mendez is a very good fighter. But with the time off and with him not really performing all that well in his last few fights, I mean, it's kind of a head scratcher right now. What are we going to see from Mendez? You know, now obviously with USADA and everything coming into play here, I mean, testing is, he don't want to flunk another test. Obviously he's going to be spending that much longer. So you would think, you know, I mean, he has his act cleaned up a little bit here. He's put the work in. I heard he had a great training camp. Everything's going as planned. And I mean, he feels great right now. So according to him and according to his camp, he's ready to fight. I just doubt him right now. I have to see him perform. And really, I hope this fight goes, for Mendez's sake, I hope it goes three strong. I want to see his conditioning, how it's going to hold up in a three-round fight and how tired he is at the end of the third round, because that's going to show us a lot for the future of Chad Mendez in this spot. But he might not make it that far. I mean, Miles Jury is no joke. You know, obviously he's got a total complete skill set as well. He doesn't have that one punch knockout power that Mendez does. I mean, Mendez does. He's more explosive, Mendez is, than Jury. And he's got better wrestling as well. But Jury also has some solid wrestling. He also has some good striking skill. He also has some good knockout power. He also has some length in his fight. And he's got a submission game to go along with it. So this is not an easy fight to come back to if you're Chad Mendez. And to me, I've been a big fan of Miles Jury for a long time. In fact, he's kind of disappointed me in his losses to Cerrone and Oliveira. I wasn't expecting Oliveira to – I mean, we know that Oliveira could pretty much submit anybody. He gets around your neck, you're done. But I thought personally that Jury was going to be a little bit better defensively and not kind of get caught up in all that right away, as quick as it did at least. So that was disappointing for me. But he did bounce back since he moved down to the featherweight division after he suffered that first loss against Oliveira. He did bounce back and get two impressive wins over De La Torre and then his last fight over Rick Glenn. So it's nice to see him get back on track because, again, I thought this guy was a future champion in his own right myself. So you have two elite MMA fighters going at it here. I'm going to side with Jury because he's just a little bit more proven at this point. I mean, again, we're not talking about what they've accomplished in their UFC careers. We're talking about what they've accomplished lately in the last couple of years. And Mendes, we haven't seen where he's at right now. And with how he looked before the suspension until, you know, with the suspension until now, it's just hard to trust him in this spot, especially against a very game and dangerous Miles Jury. So I'm going to pick Jury. I think his length could give Mendes a lot of problems. I think even on the ground, if Mendes gets top position, I think Jury's going to give him some fits there as well and probably not end up staying on the ground. And if that's the case, then round two and round three is going to get a lot tougher for Mendes because I think Jury's going to be a lot harder to take down. And, you know, and then he can obviously utilize that length and that striking ability on the feet. So I think it plays out where we eventually see Jury probably finishing Mendes right before it hits the scorecard. So the pick is Jury, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it end inside. Part of me hopes that I'm wrong and we see Mendes look back to form, look like that champion caliber fighter that we've seen before, kind of as he was working up that ladder. I hope we see that Mendes, but I don't think we're going to see him. So the pick is Jury to have the biggest win of his career against Mendes.
If Mendes does return to form, I mean, this is a winnable fight. He has the wrestling advantage against Jury. He has the pure striking power advantage against Jury. And we've seen Jury hurt briefly in fights back, dating back even to The Ultimate Fighter. But that being said, Jury has been more active. He has a strong, well-rounded game. And if Mendes is rusty, Jury can eat him for lunch. I mean, Jury looked so good in his last fight against Rick Glenn. I mean, he was just better than Glenn in every facet. He was better on the feet. He was more technical. He was better on the ground. He was better in the clinch. I mean, he just destroyed Glenn over the course of three rounds. It was a very one-sided performance. I mean, the only thing you could say about it is, you know, maybe he should have got the finish. In this fight, you know, Miles Jury does have some pop in his hands. He's got a significant reach advantage. And if he's able to utilize that reach advantage, he could definitely, catch Chad Mendes on his chin. And we know that Mendes, his chin is a bit vulnerable, especially now it's started to go a little bit more with, Jose Aldo having knocked him out before and then Aldo and him having that crazy war with McGregor finishing Mendes, and then with Frankie Edgar finishing Mendes, which was probably the most surprising of all. We know that Jury is capable of finishing somebody on the feet. We saw it in the Takanori Gomi fight. So if Jury catches Mendes with something long and straight, Mendes can definitely go down. Jury also has those long limbs that can potentially catch Mendes in something on the ground, although that's a little bit more unlikely. We really haven't seen Mendes have too many problems with submissions against any submission fighters. The main thing here is, you know, how is Mendes going to respond to some adversity? Has his chin gotten any better during this long layoff? Is he going to be rusty? And will he be able to take Jury down and without having any issues with Jury's you know, pretty strong ground game? So a lot of questions that we're going to see answered. And as Nick mentioned, is, you know, if Mendes was already on a decline, how's he going to perform after a long layoff? So I'm just going to play it safe here and side with Jury, who did look really good in his last fight compared to Mendes. But if Mendes can return to form, he could definitely win this fight if he lands something heavy or if he's able to kind of ground Jury over the course of three rounds. So I'm going to side with Jury, but I'm definitely cautious in case old Chad Mendes returns. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Randy Brown, who is 10-2, taking on Nico Price, who is 11-1 with one no contest. Now, Nate, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Price open -145, Randy Brown +105. Looking over at BetDSI right now, it's -130 for Brown. The comeback on Price, even money. So line flip, more action coming in Brown's way. But again, another spot where you're going to draw two-way action because this is a competitive line, a competitive fight as well. I'm looking forward to it, actually, because I think this is a big test for both gentlemen here. I mean, we've seen Nico Price kind of have his ups and downs so far in the UFC. I mean, he had his ups by knocking Joban out. He had his down by getting submitted by Luque in that fight. Then, of course, he bounced back with another submission win over George Sullivan in his last fight. I mean, what my take is on Price, he's got some size for the division, of course, because he's got some length. He's got some finishing ability on the feet. He's got some finishing ability on the ground as well. But he is a little wild and he is a little aggressive, and that leads to defensive flaws, whether it's on the feet and on the ground a little bit as well. So I think he's at that spot where he's still improving, though, and he's young enough that he's going to continue to improve at age 28 and getting this real-time experience and getting the confidence of submitting guys like Sullivan or getting wins over a guy like Joban. I mean, that's very, very good for your resume and your career and your progression as a fighter. So he's definitely getting better as he progresses in the UFC. There's no question about that. His technique's even getting a little bit cleaner as well. I've seen that. But he's still a little bit too sloppy for my liking. And I think Randy Brown is just a little bit more of a technical fighter of the two. And again, talk about length. Randy Brown's actually a little bit longer. I think he is the more technical striker on the feet. I don't think he has as much pure power as Nico Price does, but he does have enough power to do some damage as well. And then on the ground, I think that Randy Brown also can hang with him, and he's got the ability to be dangerous, I guess, and throw up some submissions, of course, as well. He's got some wrestling that he can utilize offensively. Defensively, he needs to improve a little bit, though, as well. He has been put on his back against strong wrestlers, and he's been controlled in that aspect as well. So this is why it's going to be a very close fight, because these guys have a lot of similarities back and forth. These guys are both going to look to get top position on the ground. These guys are going to both look for the knockout on the feet as well. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Randy Brown as well. I just think that technique is going to do him good here in this spot, because it is going to be a little bit cleaner. His defense, I think, is going to be a little bit tighter, and I think he's going to be able to exploit the openings that Price leaves as he's coming in a little bit more aggressive. So that's why I kind of lean a little bit more towards Randy Brown here in this spot. But another one that's a pick 'em fight for a reason. So it's difficult at the betting window, but I still think right now where it's at, it's Randy Brown or pass situation here. The pick is going to be Brown to pull off the close competitive win over Nico Price.
I'll side with Randy Brown as well. I just think that overall, Brown is the more technical striker of the two. He uses his length better. He has a very strong reach for the welterweight division. Now, Price has a pretty good reach too, but it feels like he's more of the brawling type. He wants to get inside. He wants to land that huge shot. And if this fight goes to the floor, Price does look for the occasional takedowns. He's not great at them. But if he does get it, I'm a little concerned that Brown is a little too comfortable off of his back and that Price could hold top position against him. That being said, with Brown's crazy length in the welterweight division, he could present some threats. He can throw up arm bars, triangle chokes. I mean, you name it. He's pretty aggressive off of his back, even if he is a little too comfortable there. And he could reverse the position. I'm impressed with Brown's ability to connect offensively. He is significantly more accurate than Price and does land at a higher rate per minute. So I think Brown will be the more active striker. I think Brown will be connecting more often due to his reach advantage. And as long as he stays at distance, he's going to be finding a home for those jabs and potential straight shots and definitely some kicks if he's able to mix those in. And, you know, Brown is the type of fighter that is always adding a little bit more to his game every time we see him. And I think that Nico Price, I mean, I really haven't seen him do anything different in any of his fights than what we've seen in his first fight, where, you know, he's going out there and he's trying to win by first round knockout for the most part. If it goes longer than that, that's not part of his game plan for the most part. So I think that Randy Brown paces himself here, outstrikes Price, makes Price miss more often than not, and then uses that length well and frustrates Price. And I think that Randy Brown can win a decision here. So Brown is going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Dennis Bermudez, who is 17-8, taking on Rick Glenn, who is 25-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open and how has the public shifted things so far?
Bermudez open -170, the comeback on Glenn +130. Right now looking over at BetDSI, Bermudez is -250, the comeback is +200. So line opened a little low for Bermudez in this spot, and it has been bet up a little bit here to the point where it's starting to get tough to have confidence in Bermudez, I guess. I mean, obviously it's a shame that Bermudez is suffering back-to-back split decision losses, and on top of that, he got knocked out the fight before that. So three losses in a row for a guy that went on a tear. And he kind of climbed that featherweight ranking, right, before that. Not too long before that. I know he suffered, you know, he had a couple losses before that as well. But I'm saying that crazy win streak that he went on, I mean, he was definitely an elite featherweight that we all thought would possibly, again, get that title shot and be a threat for the title contention, and my, how quickly things turn. And this fight with Glenn means a lot. He needs to get back on track. I think he will here, though, in this spot. I mean, Rick Glenn, like we said, very talented fighter. I mean, if you look, he reminds me, I mean, there's a lot of similarities with him and Miles Jury, especially with the length in the division, how well-rounded they are with their skill sets. I mean, Glenn, you know, when he came into the UFC, he's been one of these savvy veterans that have been around the sport for a long time. And I was glad to see him get the opportunity in the UFC because he belongs, really. And his wins over Nover and Tucker have proven that. But unfortunately, again, he ran into a bustle on Miles Jury. And now he's going to probably run into another one in Dennis Bermudez, because what I think here in this matchup with Bermudez, Bermudez is the better wrestler in this spot. Bermudez obviously is just a better athlete overall, and he should be able to win this fight. The problem is Bermudez's chin. I mean, we've seen it time and time again that it has let him down. Even though Glenn is not exactly a one-punch knockout artist, he does have enough power in his hands or in his knees or in his elbows that he could clip that chin of Bermudez and then pounce on something quick. I mean, that's a lot of times how Bermudez gets beat. They rock him, then jump on a sub and they put him out. So that's always going to be a concern with a guy like Bermudez. But outside of that, if Bermudez doesn't get caught up, doesn't get rocked, I mean, he should win on the scorecards. There's no question about that. I don't think he's going to be able to finish a tough fighter like Glenn, but I do think Bermudez has what it takes to win this fight and get back on track. And he's still, I mean, he's not in his peak. He's not in his prime, but I wouldn't say he's a declined fighter that's, you know, a step away from being cut from the UFC or anything like that. I still think Bermudez has enough in the tank and he's going to probably get back on track here. But again, at the betting window where it is right now, -250-ish, I don't know. I don't trust that chin enough to actually lay that kind of chalk against a guy, a fighter like Rick Glenn either. So you guys got to be cautious at the betting window. But as far as a pure pick goes, it should be Bermudez getting the W here.
And I'm in agreement. Bermudez is the better wrestler compared to Glenn. Bermudez has a little bit more power compared to Glenn. He's the more aggressive striker. Granted, his chin is not very good. So if Glenn is able to connect, then that can turn this entire fight on its head. And as Nick mentioned, Glenn is similar to Miles Jury, but the difference here is, you know, Glenn's just not a great athlete. He doesn't have that really explosive quickness. He's more of that gritty, tough type fighter that finds ways to win in fights where maybe he's losing and his opponent starts to slow down. He's the guy that can turn it up a notch and maybe find a late finish or lose early and then come on strong as his opponent starts to fade. That's really the Rick Glenn style. And I don't think Dennis Bermudez is really going to be slowing down. I mean, this is a guy that just pushes a high tempo and either wears his opponent out or tries to overwhelm them. And Bermudez really has only had issues against people that could either take him down and put him on his back or people that can hurt him on the feet. And I'm not sure that Rick Glenn will be able to do either. Bermudez's chin isn't great, so Glenn could hurt him on the feet, but, you know, pure power really isn't his specialty. He's the type of guy that has that death by a thousand cuts style where if he's going well, he's just landing some pitter-patter shots and just slowly accumulating damage. And I think that Bermudez will be able to avoid that type of situation if he can get in Glenn's face and really get inside, land some good crisp hooks, shoot for takedowns, dump Glenn on his back. The other thing I am a little worried about is Glenn does have some submissions off of his back. He's got a decent guillotine choke. So he could be a threat if Bermudez is just diving headfirst into takedowns. But Bermudez is a lot better than he's been performing. And I think that this is a good potential bounce back fight for him. He just has to be careful because Glenn is dangerous. He's not a big one shot hitter or one shot quitter or anything, but Bermudez definitely does need to protect his chin here. But if he does, I think that he gets the job done. So I'm going to side with Bermudez. I think he wins a decision. Now this brings us to the co-main event of the evening in the welterweight division. We have Sage Northcutt, who is 10-2, taking on Zach Otto, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Northcutt open -140. The comeback on Otto, even money. And right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is -140 for Northcutt, +110 for Otto as well. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in this fight. Another tough one. I mean, I think the line where it's at right now is kind of appropriately set. I've never been a huge supporter of Sage Northcutt. You all know that I've liked to fade him in the past and have had success doing so as well. But I must say this, Northcutt's improvement is definitely evident. He is getting better in all aspects of the game. I think it was a really good move training with Team Alpha Male. Again, he's another one of these guys that's bounced around from camp to camp and has had some world-class training. So it's not like he wasn't getting it before, but I think that the Faber camp and Alpha Male guys have definitely upped his game to another level. Now, with that said, this is not a lightweight fight. This is actually a welterweight. And I'm stating that from the beginning because if you look back through Northcutt's career, he's actually 0-2 as a welterweight, and the success that he's had has actually come at lightweight. So he's bouncing back up to the division that he hasn't had any success in the UFC, and he's looking to get that first win in the welterweight division against a very tough fighter in Zach Otto here. So it's not going to be an easy task. That's why I think the line's appropriately set. I mean, of course, we all know that Sage Northcutt has a ton of hype. He's a popular fighter as well. And typically speaking, especially at the beginning when we were setting lines for Sage Northcutt, I mean, a lot of people were banking on him getting easy wins or whatnot coming in that way. So he was a popular guy at the betting window as well. That's not necessarily the case anymore, as evident with this line being so close, because it's reality. This should be a competitive matchup. I think Otto actually have several advantages in this fight, but one advantage that he does not have is the speed and athleticism. I mean, if you watch Northcutt, he's a gifted athlete. There's no question about that. He was a good sport karate fighter. He's trained, like I said, even in the sport karate world, he's had a lot of good training, and he's put a lot of work into the martial arts since he was a kid. So he has all that ability. I mean, the physique, everything to go along with it. I mean, it shows. The guy is definitely quick, explosive. He has even decent wrestling, decent timing on his takedowns as well, offensively at least. And then he's got that, you know, speed and knockout power to go along with it, with a solid kicking game. So the guy is a tough out, and the guy's explosiveness can do some damage, and that's what's going to probably be the key in this fight. That's why I keep mentioning it, because I think Otto is a very solid, a very tough fighter, but I think Sage Northcutt's speed can be the difference here. If he's aggressive with it and he lands frequently on a guy like Otto, we could see him possibly win this fight by stoppage or by knockout or by potentially being so much of a threat on the feet that the takedowns come a little bit easier for Northcutt as well. So that's kind of the game plan, I think, for Sage, is use that speed, use that power, use that athleticism to get the fight in your favor here against a guy like Otto. Now, Otto is going to be trying to land the heavy shots. He's going to be the one that's actually probably looking to take Sage to the floor, get top position, and drop some bombs on him as well. And he's going to have success doing so, I think, especially as the fight progresses. I think Northcutt's conditioning has gotten a little better, but that's been one of his Achilles heels as well, is his conditioning has let him down from time to time, and he does slow down as the fight progresses to the point where it's noticeable at times. So, again, I think with Alpha Male and the training he's getting, that has improved some. But I think with the power and the grittiness that a guy like Otto has, it's not going to be an easy fight for Northcutt. I mean, Otto's going to be pushing the pace, and if Northcutt doesn't get him out of there early, round two and round three is going to probably be miserable for a guy like Northcutt as well. So I'm going to take the underdog again against Northcutt. Again, I'm kind of on the fence with this one, going back and forth a little bit, because I can see Northcutt possibly getting this win, but I still wouldn't lay the chalk on him, even if it's only 140. This is definitely a dog or pass situation in Otto. This is a tough test for, I think, Northcutt again. And if he passes it, which his progression and his improvement says it might happen in this fight, I'll be impressed. I mean, that'll definitely be a solid win. That would definitely tell us that Northcutt is getting to the point where you have to take the guy seriously. Not that you don't, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, it'd be a very solid win over a guy like Otto. So with all that being said, I'm still not going to pick Northcutt. I'm still going to side with Otto here. I just think he does have that punching power. I am worried about Northcutt's chin a little bit as well. He has been tagged and rocked in several fights, and Otto does have enough punching power that he could probably do some damage and maybe get him out of there. So Northcutt usually manages to survive. He ends up getting rocked, but he recovers fairly quickly. Doesn't do him good because he's lost, you know, a few of those fights or whatnot as well. But that being said, I'm expecting a better Northcutt to show up here, but I don't know if it's still going to be enough to take out a guy like Otto. So the pick is Otto to get the W here, maybe even by stoppage against Northcutt.
I'm going to go with Sage Northcutt. Now, Zach Otto is capable of winning this fight. He has the style that could win this fight with that grinding. And he also has a little bit of power that he showed in the Mike Pyle knockout in his most recent win. So he could grind this out, put Sage Northcutt on his back, and keep him there, especially as Northcutt starts to slow down potentially, because he uses so much energy and explosive movement early. And he has the power to clip Sage on the chin, and we've seen Northcutt get rocked on the feet and get hurt in fights. So both paths to victory for Otto are there. That being said, Northcutt is way faster than Otto. He is such a better athlete. It's crazy. And Northcutt has some good power. He has some wrestling. And he's getting better pretty much every time we've seen him. As Nick mentioned, though, I am a little concerned that he has not performed well in the welterweight division. So moving up a weight class, granted, I think it's only a matter of time until he moved up to welterweight permanently. Maybe the last couple times he tried out welterweight, it was just a little too early in his career. But being 22 years old now, and still filling out overall with his body, I mean, he's just too big to stay at lightweight long term. Kind of like Jake Matthews, another lightweight prospect that moved up to welterweight. So I think with Sage, though, I mean, he's got the reflexes, the agility, the speed, the athleticism, the power, everything going for him. If he can just start to put that all together, I mean, he can definitely be a threat. And Zach Otto is somebody that he can definitely take advantage of with that speed and power. I mean, he can step in and crack Otto, especially with the way that Otto just kind of folded against Li Jinglong. That gives me a little bit more confidence here. I'm still going to be concerned because Otto has enough power in his hands to crack Sage and knock him out and set up a finish. Or Otto does have some wrestling ability, and he did get a couple takedowns in the Keiichi Kunimoto fight, so he could grind Sage out. And we've seen Sage isn't too good off of his back. He's basically got a guillotine choke, and other than that, he's not very good at getting back to his feet. So Otto could get top position and just hold it. So I do have some concerns about Northcutt, as you rightfully should, especially after the two losses he's had so far in the UFC. But I am going to side with Northcutt here. I think it's a winnable fight, and I think that youth and athleticism does help him prevail. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division. We have former champion Junior Dos Santos, who is 18-5, taking on UFC newcomer Blagoy Ivanov, who is 16-1-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
JDS minus 120, Ivanov minus 120. That was the opening line. And right now what we're seeing at BetDSI is minus 175 for JDS. The comeback on Ivanov is plus 145. So needless to say, the action came in JDS's way. Nothing to the point where the books are going to be buried on JDS action, because I mean, limits are a lot lower, obviously, when they first open up. So they are getting two-way action, and we're going to probably see some dog action come back on Ivanov as well. So it's going to be an interesting spot to see where the books end up in this fight. Because you have a young, not young, I mean, he's 31 years old, but as far as UFC career goes, I mean, a guy making his UFC debut that's a hungry fighter that has fought in other leagues like World Series of Fighting, like Bellator, that has had a lot of success against solid competition. The guy's a finisher for the most part, and that's what he's going to look to do against JDS here. I mean, for JDS, this doesn't really look like the right fight. I mean, he's coming off the USADA suspension. He's coming off a knockout loss to the hands of Stipe that looked just awful, in my opinion, to him. I mean, how he got beat in that fight was just – wasn't expecting, I mean, Stipe to just run through him like that. So that shows me sign of a declined fighter. I mean, he backs up, gets himself against the cage, and then he lets these guys unload, and his chin is not taking the punishment these days at all. So Ivanov is one of those fighters that could definitely do that same sort of thing. Now, of course, he's going to be the smaller fighter here, and JDS has fought the who's who in the UFC, you know, the best in the world. So what Ivanov throws at him, it's nothing, it's going to be nothing too special that he hasn't seen before. But I mean, when Father Time does catch up to you and your chin is on the decline and you're coming off of USADA suspension and you're facing a guy in front of you that has knockout power, not a good combination. So I think JDS is definitely the better fighter. In fact, I think he should actually try to wrestle here in this spot a little bit, get top position and try to blast out Ivanov on the ground. I think he might be a little bit safer doing so in that spot. I can't pick JDS here. I think, I mean, the writing's on the wall for him. I think Ivanov's being brought in here to be another true contender for the heavyweight division potentially here. And a win over JDS will definitely get him that attention, get him that respect, and they'll throw him in the mix. I mean, a win for JDS here in this spot over Ivanov, it's going to mean that he maybe have some life left, of course. It's going to be, it's a much needed win for him, and it'll keep him relevant somewhat. But I mean, I think his better days are behind him for sure. And Ivanov is probably going to get this win anyway. So I don't know. I just don't see it. I just don't have confidence in JDS these days. It's sad to say, because he is one of the best UFC heavyweights of all time, in my opinion. I mean, the guy was a tremendous fighter, but his days are past it right now. And I think it's Ivanov's time to come in, get a solid win, and just kind of throw his hat in as a potential contender down the road. So I'm going to pick the sled upset here and Ivanov to get the knockout win over JDS. It's going to be sad, but JDS gets knocked out again.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Now, obviously, Ivanov is dangerous. I mean, he had a nice run in Bellator. He's fought in other promotions and had success. And his only career loss was to one of the UFC's current top contenders in Volkov. So I expect that Ivanov is going to be capable of winning this fight. I mean, you go back, I mean, this guy has fought through so much adversity through his career with that crazy knife attack and everything. He beat Fedor in Combat Sambo. I mean, this is a guy that is definitely capable of pulling something impressive off. That being said, Junior Dos Santos is a fighter that is still at a high level. I mean, yeah, he looked terrible in his last fight, but he looked terrible against the best record-breaking UFC heavyweight champion of all time in Stipe Miocic. So I'm not going to hold that against him too badly. Dos Santos should have the boxing advantage here against Ivanov. He should be the better athlete. He should be more explosive. He should be able to crack Ivanov on the feet and hurt him. Now, Ivanov has power too, so I expect that if he lands something nasty against Dos Santos, he can hurt him too. But this fight should stay upright. Dos Santos has pretty good takedown defense, so I don't think Ivanov will be able to really use any of his wrestling or judo or any of that. So if this just stays as a pure stand-up fight, then Dos Santos should just be the better athlete that can get off his front foot a little bit quicker. I think this fight will be actually a lot closer to like when Dos Santos fought Ben Rothwell. I mean, yeah, Rothwell was dangerous and had power, but he was just a lot slower, and Dos Santos was able to take advantage of that. So that's how I see this fight playing out. I think it's going to be pretty straightforward. I'm a little concerned about the layoff with Dos Santos. I'm a little concerned that he continues to allow opponents to just push him on his back foot and then he gets stuck against the fence. And if that happens, Ivanov will have a path to victory with, being able to kind of corner him against the fence and land something nasty. But I think if Dos Santos can keep this fight in open space and utilize his athleticism and speed, then it's going to be very difficult for him to be beaten. So I'm going to side with the former champ. I think that he does still have something left in the tank, and I'll be rooting for him on Saturday night. So my pick is going to be Junior Dos Santos. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 133. Now, if we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.